The Fan on Demand. Go to fan590.com and sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. Is the Showdown Show on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Welcome to the Showdown on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. We're going to talk mixed martial arts, UFC, Dream, and everything in between on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590. As always, my co-host in studio, Tyler Mason. Tyler, what's up, my man?
It's good. It actually sounds really good to hear Sportsnet Radio. You say that. I like that.
Yeah, well, Sportsnet Radio, I mean, I think this is something that's been going on for a while. They're going to rebrand a whole bunch of Rogers Media stations. I absolutely love it because I work for Sportsnet and the Fan 590. So for myself, it's a mutually beautiful situation. Maybe they can take this show right across the country.
That would be great. And it kind of solidifies Sportsnet as the juggernaut of sports in Canada.
Yeah, I know we've had some all kinds of love on Twitter from the guys over at the Fan 960. I believe in Calgary, and they're very receptive. They'd love to have us out there. So hopefully, as things continue to progress here under the Rogers umbrella and empire, our voices will be heard out there in Calgary, because I love those guys. Those guys are awesome. All the guys out west, but whether it's Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver, they're absolutely studs, if you know what I'm saying. I love those guys. Crazy world in the mixed martial arts, to say the least, this past week. Some crazy news today. Earlier on, the UFC had a press conference at Madison Square Garden in New York City, showcasing an economic impact study as to what the UFC will do for the state of New York, and they're predicting at least a minimum of 2 shows per year in New York, obviously Madison Square Garden. Now, that's huge news, and they're saying something over $25 million in terms of what mixed martial arts can bring to that state, something you and I have talked about, you know, ad nauseum here in Ontario before the government here regulated mixed martial arts, that the amount of money that can be generated, not just from UFC events, but from the sport in general. If you had your crystal ball in front of you, when do you think New York would actually sanction mixed martial arts? What do you predict?
Well, I think it's obviously only a matter of time. I mean, the big states that you want is California and New York for any sport. California, they've had for a while now, and you know, New York is always kind of the center of attention, center of the economic world, center of a lot of things, right? And so I would say I'd probably think 2012.
That's what I'm thinking.
Possibly. That's probably, I think, the best. And the longer, you know, the economic problems continue, I mean, I think they're predicting another little dip. I think the more likely you'll see, you know, things like MMA get legalized, because they need revenue.
You scare me. You know way too much stuff outside of MMA. You make me nervous, because I don't think the listeners understand that before we come on the air, you're always coming up to me with the latest on this market share, and this thing is starting to pick up, and this financial situation, and oil this, and I'm just, where are you, man? This is, you know too much, man.
Well, I try my best to be a renaissance man.
Good man.
But there's another boatload of mortgages that are due in about March, I think it is, or towards the end of the year as well. And that's got to be worrisome for all the debt collectors out there and all the banks. So I can only assume that helps, because I mean, right now New York has like a $9 billion deficit. So if you only add more debt on top of that, it's only going to get worse. So I expect, you know, MMA, you know, possibly other things that aren't legal yet may be legal and taxed. And I think it's only good. I mean,
it's just an infusion of money into the economy with you know, as long as it's regulated properly, and then no one in the UFC and no one in mixed martial arts down in the state of New York isn't saying not to regulate it. Regulate it properly so it's safe for the fighters. It's, you get the right promoters in there, and the amount of money, and you can tax it from live gate receipts to merchandising to just gyms that will be opening up, and just it creates jobs. I mean, it's not one of those job creators that creates thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs, but it will create work. Gyms will open up, or gyms will continue to flourish. Membership will go up. People will be spending money in that state. I mean, we're going to really see it here in Ontario over the next 12 to 18 months. I really believe that. And as it continues to grow, it'll grow exponentially, in a percentage-wise, not like massively, but you'll see it continue to grow if the sport is allowed to flourish. We'll talk more about that a little bit later, because there's other news that's been out there today. We'll talk about all these things right now. First things first, the UFC did announce that Brock Lesnar and Junior Dos Santos will be the next coaches for the upcoming season of The Ultimate Fighter. My Twitter pretty much blew up when they announced Brock Lesnar. A lot of people were not happy with that. I disagree with their assessment. We'll get your thoughts momentarily, Tyler. Cain Velasquez has undergone surgery, so He's still going to be out for at least 8 more months to go. Mark Hominick, Dana White did confirm my report earlier on Sportsnet this week on Sportsnet Connected and on MMA Connected that should Mark Hominick defeat George Roop, he will get the title shot versus featherweight champion Jose Aldo, and it'll happen at UFC 129. But there's more to this story that people aren't really taking into consideration. We'll talk about that momentarily. When Thiago Silva, fought Brandon Vera and he started doing the tap dance and the slaps. I won't use the word
bongo drums.
The bongo drums and the slaps that he was using on Brandon Vera. One of the people that chimed up right away on Twitter was John Bones Jones, and he said, "I'd like to slap Thiago Silva in the face." That's just paraphrasing. Well, Thiago Silva's come out, used a couple of four-letter words to describe John Jones. Doesn't care what John Jones has to think. I want to talk about that potential fight that the UFC should definitely put on if that's the case. Ben Rothwell is recovering from ACL injury. The Strikeforce heavyweight tournament, we didn't really get to touch on it last week. We'll touch on it on this show here. They announced 3-round fights, and Overeem's title is not on the line. Craziness. Josh Barnett rips Dana White again, and right away people are asking me, are you going to talk to Dana White about Josh Barnett? We know what Dana White's going to tell me if I mention Josh Barnett's name, but we'll talk about that momentarily. You got more news as well with some contracts?
Yeah, Donghyun Kim and Charles Oliveira extended their UFC contract. So it's good to see some, up and comers getting their money. And
well, a huge fan of Charles Oliveira,
and I'm a huge fan of Donghyun Kim. So
yeah.
I see him more of as a contender, and Oliveira is obviously a blue chip prospect.
Well, stun gun. Let me ask you this: when you heard stun gun call out George St. Pierre after he defeated Nate Diaz, what's the first thing that went through your mind?
I think he does deserve to be in that upper echelon of fighters. The problem with him is the way he called out GSP is his language skills is lacking. And you can see, even early on in his career in the UFC, a lot of his fights were dark matches. They weren't on television. They weren't on pay-per-views. No one got a chance to see how talented he is. And what we have seen is how dominant he can be. So I think he deserves that chance. Do I necessarily think he has the skills right now to beat a George St. Pierre? I don't know. I would probably not bet on him, but I think it's his opportunity to prove, guys like us wrong, right?
Let me ask you this. Stun gun versus Carlos Condit, who wins?
I would go with stun gun.
Stun gun. Stun gun versus Thiago Alves, who wins?
I'd have to go stun gun again.
Stun gun takes on Josh Koscheck, who wins?
That one's a little more difficult, but I still think he would edge him out because I think he has a little more experience in the submission parts of the grappling. So
stun gun versus John Fitch, who wins?
That one I'd probably go with John Fitch.
Stun gun versus Jake Shields, who wins?
I would probably go with Jake Shields.
Before stun gun can call out George St. Pierre, he has a lot of guys to beat still.
But now those guys are locked up in fights already. That's where it gets interesting. Is it's all about timing, right? You see guys get injured all the time. So I think it was good for his career to call out George St. Pierre. It puts him out there, makes guys like us talk about it, makes, puts him out in the spotlight, and people can actually put him in the conversation of who deserves that next title shot. I think he's definitely one of those guys. Is he the next guy in line? No. But he could potentially step in there and give a good fight to whoever's champion.
All right. Now, speaking of champion, Cain Velasquez, we know, is out. He was supposed to take on Junior Dos Santos as part of the UFC 129 show here in Toronto Saturday, April 30th at the Rogers Centre. With him being out, Junior Dos Santos was left opponentless until Dana White announced that Brock Lesnar will face Junior Dos Santos in June in Vancouver. That's what it's looking like right now. After these two go through recording and the airing of the next season of The Ultimate Fighter, many people are irate over Brock Lesnar being selected as a coach on The Ultimate Fighter. I can't help but laugh. Brock Lesnar is not designed to be a coach. He doesn't have to be a coach. The coaches for those fighters that are going to be on Team Brock Lesnar are going to be Marty Morgan, Rodrigo Comprito Medeiros, Peter Welch, guys of that nature. That's Eric Paulson. Come on. He's one of the best in the game. Those are the assistant coaches and the guys that are going to work with Team Brock Lesnar. What Brock Lesnar brings to the table is an amazing amazing work ethic. This guy is going to take every single one of those guys, their wrestling games, through the roof. At the same time, he is the biggest name in the sport today, bigger than George St. Pierre. He's a guy that when he fights pretty much guarantees 1 million pay-per-view buys. If he can spill any of that knowledge and the importance of marketing yourself as a fighter, that all these guys are starting to realize, like Frank Mir caught that bug a long time ago. All Chael Sonnen caught that bug not too long ago.
Big time.
They realize the importance of promoting yourself as a fighter. And that's what Brock Lesnar can help teach these guys. And that's an invaluable thing. That's not physical. It's mental. It's looking at yourself as a brand. Lesnar also has a book coming out. He's got a clothing line. The UFC is always looking for ratings. I mean, let's not forget what the Ultimate Fighter actually is. At times, it's a 13-week infomercial for an upcoming fight. So we're now going to see 13 weeks of Brock Lesnar and Junior Dos Santos, just like we saw with Rampage and Rashad, just like we saw with George St. Pierre and Josh Koscheck. It's 13 weeks to promote a headlining fight. I have no issues with anyone making this selection of Brock Lesnar being, I'm actually surprised he accepted it. I mean, Brock Lesnar in front of cameras in Vegas, away from Minnesota for 6 weeks, that's going to be crazy. Who knows what's going to happen on the show? But when you first heard the news, Tyler, what went through your mind?
I thought it was absolute genius matchmaking. I mean, just from a competition standpoint, this was a great job by Joe Silva there. I mean, having them on the show, obviously, having your number one marketable star on The Ultimate Fighter is going to, you know, be a huge ratings push. And I think for a long time, you know, with the critics coming out and saying that Brock is too green to coach. Well, for a long time, the show hasn't been about the star coaching. It's more been around their camp helping coach. And we've seen that for all the recent seasons.
Yeah.
And would you want an active competitive fighter, you know, teaching you their skills? Of course you would. Of course you want the top guy in the top, at the top of the hierarchy of contenders teaching you everything he knows. But you really want those guys that are focusing on the aspects that make up those guys' games. Right? You want the world champion jiu-jitsu guy teaching you jiu-jitsu. You don't want someone who's, you know, like, say, Brock Lesnar. He's a world, you know...
It was like George St. Pierre. George St. Pierre doesn't need to coach these guys. It's John Danaher that has to coach these guys.
But you have, you know, Brock Lesnar, NCAA Division I wrestling champion. You want him to teach you the drive it takes to become champion. You don't necessarily need him to teach you the technical aspects of that. And when it comes to jiu-jitsu, he's still new at jiu-jitsu. You want the world champion jiu-jitsu coach that's teaching him to teach you. I mean, The guys at the top of the sport bring in the best coaches because they have the money and the resources to do so, and they have that kind of drive to be at the top. And you're having a chance to just be a part of that camp. That's invaluable in itself. So I think the critics will realize that as this season goes on, that it's really about the coaches around them. And we saw it with the GSP season. You saw how much publicity his coaches got. That's what it's more about these days. But I think what's invaluable from being under Dos Santos or a Brock is learning the drive it takes to be the best. You're going to see these guys work day in and day out at their job, and you're going to pick that up, and you're going to want to do the same thing.
He can set the example. I mean, that's what he does. He's a guy that he's a workhorse. Talk to anyone, whether it's Paul Heyman or anyone that trains with Brock Lesnar, and they'll tell you the same thing all the time. This guy works hard day in, day out. He secludes himself from, you know, reality, and he has his own little gym up there in Minnesota, and he just works his butt off in preparing for fights. Now, people can criticize the fact that he's not the greatest striker. It takes time to learn striking, especially at the elite level. Once he became the world champion for the UFC, it says a lot, the fact that, you know, he was able to do it with minimal amounts of skill versus guys that have been competing for such a very long time. And it just goes to show you that he does have the gameness to do what he has to do. I mean, this is a guy that after he lost to Shane, or after he beat Shane Carwin, people criticized his striking. Then he gets outstruck by Cain Velasquez, and we're never going to see him again. And who does he go and fight next? The toughest guy, the best striker in the UFC's heavyweight division, in Junior Dos Santos.
And that's what's so great about this matchup, is it's testing both these guys' weaknesses. You have Brock Lesnar going there against the best UFC heavyweight striker, and you have Dos Santos, who the question going into the Cain fight is, would he be able to deal with Cain's wrestling? Well, we're going to see how well he deals with an elite wrestler with Brock Lesnar. So
this is going to promote Junior Dos Santos as well.
And if either guy wins, they're right in line for another title shot. You either have the marketable Brock Lesnar, former champ, or you have Dos Santos, who's just run through everybody, including one of the best wrestlers in the heavyweight division. That's why this is so genius. I'm amazed by Joe Silva's and Dana White and all those guys who worked behind this one. It's great all around.
Now, there's so many other questions that I want to pose to you and get people thinking out there in terms of Brock Lesnar taking on Junior Dos Santos, as well as, you know, the whole Brock Lesnar enigma that is going to be on the reality show. What can we all expect? Is this going to be like an absolute gong show where he walks off the set? And what if he loses to Junior Dos Santos? Is that the last we will see of Brock Lesnar competing in the Ultimate Fighting Championship or mixed martial arts in general? We'll talk more about that after the break. You're listening to The Showdown on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Make your friends weep with envy. Win wicked prizes inside the fan club. Join today at fan590.com. This is The Showdown. Showdown with Showdown Joe on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Welcome back to The Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe. You're listening to Mixed Martial Arts Dream, UFC, and everything in between on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. Once again, my co-host in studio is Tyler Mason. We were talking off air about some of the craziness that we're about to ensue here on the upcoming season of The Ultimate Fighter. The one thing I like about The Ultimate Fighter, especially the very first episode, is they tease you as to what's coming up in the season. With the Rampage and Rashad, we saw these guys just going at each other and sometimes getting nose to nose. And when is that episode going to air? We saw that with the last one when the very first episode they showed Josh Koscheck grab Tate, aka the guy that Koscheck was calling, oh, you're a nurse, grabbed him by the throat. So we were waiting for that episode. So you can just imagine, after 6 weeks of recording The Ultimate Fighter, the tease that they're going to have in that very first episode of The Ultimate Fighter, whether it's Brock Lesnar walking off, leaving, whether it's Brock Lesnar getting in front of Junior Dos Santos or getting into a scrap with the camp, should there be a controversial decision. I mean, if something like that happens in the Ultimate Fighter gym. I've been to that gym. It's a beautiful facility. But if something happens between Brock Lesnar's camp and Junior Dos Santos's camp and those two guys get hot-headed, who's going to stop Brock Lesnar from doing anything?
That's true. I mean, you really don't want to get in the way of him. But like, Dos Santos doesn't really seem like the type to get too overly excited one way or the other, where Brock Lesnar is the complete opposite. You don't know if he's going to be humble Brock Lesnar or, you know, crazy
me.
Brock
I know
Lesnar.
That. Oh, yeah.
He could go one way or the other. So I think that's the wild card is Lesnar, of course. And I think that's why people are going to tune in. That's why he gets such high ratings. That's why his pay-per-view buys are higher than anyone else's, because he's that kind of character you want to know more about. He's like the Mike Tyson of MMA. He's the guy that you whether you like him or you hate him, you just want to watch to see what he's going to do.
I like that analogy. I'll tell you why.
To see how he's going to compete, right?
You can probably, off the top of your head, name five of the craziest things that Mike Tyson has ever said. The same thing with Muhammad Ali, the same thing with Chael Sonnen, and Brock Lesnar, that infamous interview post-UFC 100 when he defeated Frank Mir. People are still talking about that today. He's had two fights since then. You know, he's people are still harking back to the fact that he took a shot at one of the UFC sponsors. He made that comment about mounting his wife after the fight. He just, you know, took the horseshoe and did what he had to do with Frank Mir. People still talk about that, forgetting the fact that after that bout, when he fought Shane Carwin, he specifically said, I'm a humbled man, I still stand before you, but I'm the baddest man on the planet, something of that nature. And then, you know, we didn't hear from him after the Cain Velasquez fight, but people still go back to what Brock Lesnar said at UFC 100. He's one of those guys that no matter what he says or what he does, people are going to listen, people are going to remember, people are going to tune in. Whether you love him or whether you hate him, you will tune in, whether it's the Ultimate Fighter or the next time Brock Lesnar fights. The other thing I'm thinking about the show here is, you know, how is he going to react to so many different scenarios with all those cameras in his face? This is a guy that generally doesn't like being in front of a camera. Well, he has no problem being in front of a camera. Doesn't really like doing interviews. I mean, I've said it numerous times on this show here. I've said it in various interviews away from the station. When I interview Brock Lesnar, it's hit or miss. You never know which Brock Lesnar is going to show up. 9 times out of 10, the Lesnar that I get, when I sit him down or when I have a one-on-one situation with him, he's golden. He's absolutely golden. He's always smiling. He's always great. The worst is when you get Brock Lesnar after he's done a media scrum, after he's done a whole whack of other things. Then it's like he's agitated. He wants to get out of there. Be careful the questions that you ask. Other fellow brethren out there that have interviewed Brock Lesnar that even get that one chance to do it don't speak as highly as I do sometimes of Brock Lesnar. He's hit or miss. You just never know what you're going to get. Now you're going to get 6 weeks of cameras in his face nonstop. He's going to be mic'd nonstop. He's going to have a boom mic over his head all the time. Every way he turns, something's going to be said. If Dana White ticks him off, you think he's going to back down from Dana White? He's not the type of guy to back down from Dana White. Never has, never will.
And yeah, that's what you get from reality television is it amplifies everything. I mean, and you take a character like Brock Lesnar and you put him in front of the cameras, which, you know, he's obviously a person that values his privacy. It's only going to amplify his good moods and it's only going to amplify his bad moods. So I really think depending on how it's edited and what we get, we're going to see whatever they want us to see, because with Brock Lesnar, he has that kind of facet where he can go one way or the other. And I think that's why people are going to tune in this season. I think I will say this will be higher rated than the Ultimate Fighter 10 when Kimbo was on.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, when Kimbo was on there, those ratings really peaked high. We know it firsthand because it airs on Rogers Sportsnet. But with Lesnar being on there, I think it's going to get crazier and crazier. And I think it's really important. And the UFC is going to be, you know, absolute geniuses about this. That first episode, the tease at the very end, what to expect during this season's Ultimate Fighter. I think it's going to be a gong show. Let's be honest. I mean, any way that any altercation that Lesnar is going to be a part of, if it's going to be recorded, I think will be in that tease. What do you think will happen if there's a Caleb Starnes / Ken Shamrock scenario where Caleb Starnes, I think it was Caleb Starnes that stepped up to Shamrock and basically said your coaching sucks or I disagree with your coaching and what you're doing. Other guys in the Ultimate Fighter have done it as well, questioning their coaches. What do you think is going to happen to that first guy that steps up and questions Brock Lesnar and his coaching if someone actually does that?
I really think Brock Lesnar is the kind of person that says, you know, if you're not going to accept what I'm giving you, then I don't really care. Like, I think he would just brush them aside. But I don't think there's going to be too many confrontations. I mean, with, you know, Caleb and with Shamrock, they're relatively near the same size, but we're talking about a cast of welterweights with a 265-pound man. I mean, I really don't think any of these guys are going to get in Brock Lesnar's face. It's probably a little too intimidating.
I wouldn't be surprised. I will not be surprised, welterweight or not. There's a lot of guys out there. It's testosterone that builds. You're in a house for 6 weeks with, you know, other alpha males. Don't let me stress the fact that you haven't seen your girlfriend or your wife in X amount of time. Some guys have kids. Your mind starts playing tricks on you. I've talked to many guys that have been on that show, and it gets tough in there, and it gets to the point where you become fearless. You just want to fight. And, you know, I don't think the right decision is to argue with Brock Lesnar, but I wouldn't put it past anyone. And who's to say that, you know, the producers on the show are like, listen, push Brock Lesnar. Just kind of push him in a way where it's going to get him going. It's going to rile him up. You never know. It'd be great ratings. It'd be great television. Anything can happen, even if it just happens naturally. You never know what's going to happen on that show. I'm very excited for it. I don't know about you, but I'm super excited for the show.
Yeah, I'm extremely excited. I mean, I'm excited about everything that's going in the heavyweight division right now. I mean, across the board, there's just a ton going on.
You're segueing to the Strikeforce Heavyweight Tournament. I know you are.
I'm trying my best.
You did a great job because I completely concur. I know the other thing you want to talk about heavily is Mark Hominick and his potential title shot versus Jose Jr. Aldo. But yes, let's talk about the Strikeforce Heavyweight Tournament, which I think is absolutely epic. I absolutely love the idea of promoting it as a tournament. I mean, if you look past the surface, if you peel the onion away, it's bouts or fights that Strikeforce could have put on anyways, but presenting it as a tournament just makes it that much more engaging for the viewer. But we did find out earlier today that Alistair Overeem taking on Fabricio Werdum in the very first bracket, that is not a heavyweight title fight. It's a tournament fight. Nah, I don't get it. The other thing I'm concerning myself with is all of them are going to be three rounds. We all know the commissions down in the States, because the unified rules have said this on numerous. If you read the unified rules, you can have five-round title fights. It makes no difference. Or non-round, five-round non-title fights. You can have them. Many commissions were like, yeah, we could do this. Strikeforce has decided to go with the three-round format. Fine. No problem. The other question I want to raise to you is, what if Alistair Overeem wins this tournament? Who does he fight?
Well, another thing I found out is Alistair Overeem's says as far as he's only committed to Strikeforce as far as the end of the tournament. So you can read that as once the tournament's over, he's a free agent. You can go where he wants, which I'm sure the UFC be calling. I mean, not only is he one of the top heavyweights in the world in MMA, arguably the best striker in heavyweight in MMA.
Who's going to argue with that?
Now, well, there are people that argue. There is people that argue.
Last week. Alistair Overeem's the best striker in mixed martial arts in the heavyweight division. The guy won K1.
But Overeem also understands the business side of this. He knows how to promote himself. He knows how to... He has his own online documentary that he's following
awesome.
Him around. It is amazing. It's very well produced. So he's a guy that understands everything about MMA. And I mean, that's the kind of guys that you want on your roster, especially if they're elite level like Alistair. I mean, I think that's the best outcome is for him to get to at least the final. So we get that 5-round title fight and it's a legit title fight. But yeah, I think the best thing they could have done was make every single fight 5 rounds and have the title be eliminated until that final fight. But my first reaction was that it's non-title first round. I was like, no, that's stupid. I mean, it should be on the line. I mean, if a guy beats him and he's not going to get the title, that's dumb. But as far as it being fair, you can't have Alistair Overeem have a 5-round fight every round of this tournament where everyone else is having 3 rounds, and then he's completely exhausted by the time he gets to that final round months down the line.
But they're not fighting the same night, though.
It's not the same night, but I mean, it's still the wear and tear on your body, the injuries it creates, the way you have to train for 5 rounds instead of 3 rounds.
So he's not vacating the title, though?
He's not vacating the title, no.
So he loses to Verdum in the first round, technically speaking. So, and Verdum goes on and wins everything. He fights Verdum?
Yeah, and I mean, you can market that because of that is I've beat you before and I deserve that title.
I'll beat you twice.
Yeah, and then... Exactly,
so imagine Verdum
exactly.
beats Alistair Overeem twice and he's still not a champion.
It does convolute everything, but as far as fairness, I think the right way to go is the 3 rounds. The extreme right way to go would be the 5 rounds, but I mean, I don't remember a time where I've seen a 5-round fight that wasn't for a title.
Okay, so Alistair Overeem takes on Fabricio Werdum on one side of the bracket. Underneath them would be Fedor Emelianenko taking on Antonio Silva. On the other side, it's Brett Rogers versus Josh Barnett, as well as Sergey Karnatanov versus Andrei Arlovsky. Let me throw this at you.
And that's one of the best collections heavyweights in MMA in a tournament
ever.
Of all time.
Yeah, it's great. I absolutely love it. I think it's, like I said, I'm calling it epic because I think it's epic. But let me throw this at you, because a fight's a fight. Anything can happen. We've heard that 1,000 times. What if on one side of the bracket, Antonio Bigfoot Silva comes out of those four, and then Sergey Karnatanov comes out on the other side? What if that's your final?
And I mean, they've beaten the guys they needed to beat to get there. It's an elimination tournament, so I think it just makes their names that much bigger.
But they're talking about putting the semifinals on national television and the finals perhaps on pay-per-view.
Now, as far as a promoting standpoint, yeah, that's not the ideal way to go about it, but it's a sport. You can't really choose the outcomes. Do you want the Toronto Maple Leafs to face off with Montreal in the conference final? Of course you do, right?
Yeah.
You want original six teams with huge followings meeting up. That's what you want, but it doesn't always happen. Sometimes you're going to get, you know, New Jersey versus like Atlanta or something. Like that's what happens. And MMA is a sport. You can't control it. I don't think it diminishes the value of a fighter if someone else beats them. It only raises the value of the fighter that won. So if Bigfoot beats Fedor,
huge,
he becomes a more marketable star. It doesn't diminish what Fedor is or what he has been.
I think that'd be cool if Silva takes out Fedor and then Werdum takes out Overeem. Those are the two last guys to defeat Fedor.
And the thing that's the best about this is that Fedor-Silva fight is the one we were calling for months ago. We said that would be the perfect matchup. Werdum-Overeem, the matchmaking in this is very good.
Yeah, there are matches that should have happened.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm completely ecstatic. You know, I can't wait to watch it.
And the fact is that this tournament's commencing, I believe, February 22nd, if I'm not mistaken, or 21st, something of that nature. Smack dab in the middle of when the Ultimate Fighter's taping, and then once that second round starts, there goes the Ultimate Fighter. I mean, the better portion, the first three quarters of 2011, might just be remembered as the year of the heavyweights.
And I think the timing's also very good. I mean, the UFC are locking up two of their top heavyweights in a show, so they can't really compete for about 6 months usually. And, you know, we have, you know, Rothwell's recovering from ACL surgery. You know, there's a bunch of heavyweights that are kind of, Roy Nelson has
Nelson,
a problem.
Shane Carwin's going to be on that card as well with Brock Lesnar and Junior Dos Santos.
So you have a lot of these guys that are kind of tied up in fights down the line. You know, Cain Velasquez is injured. You have guys that are on the shelf injured. And then you got two of your top guys on the show. You're not going to see a lot of heavyweight fights in the UFC for that time being. So all the attention of MMA heavyweights is going to be on this Strikeforce Grand Prix. So I think the timing was almost perfect.
The one thing that we really haven't had, I don't know if anyone's contacted Dana about this or tried to contact Dana about it. I'm waiting until I get a chance to talk to him in person. But usually whenever an organization does something like this, like a competitor, he lashes out, he figures something else out. Do you think the Brock Lesnar, Junior Dos Santos is his answer to this?
It might be. I mean, if you can get people's eyes off of, Showtime and get them on to television, that's basically free cable, right? I mean, most people have cable. I think that's his way of counteracting. I mean, you want to take.
I think there's going to be more.
You want their eyes off their heavyweights, and you want the eyes on your heavyweights. And I mean, it's smart on his part too. And it just really comes down to how much MMA people want to watch. And for us, I'll watch all the MMA they want to give me.
I think we're the lucky ones here. We'll talk more about this, as well as we'll talk a little bit in depth about Mark Hominick's potential title shot versus Jose Aldo. You're listening to The Showdown on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Showdown with Showdown Joe on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. To
The Showdown. I am your host, Showdown Joe, co-host in studio Tyler Mason. You are listening to The Showdown on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. We're talking everything from UFC to Strikeforce, mixed martial arts in general, Bellator season 4.
Yeah, season 4.
Coming up soon.
Can't wait to see that.
It's going to be awesome. I'm really looking forward to that. I love Bellator. Bellator's my favorite.
I love the resurrection of the tournament in MMA.
Tournaments rule.
That is probably the best thing that's come out of the past couple of years.
It gives people, you don't have to be a basketball fan, but when that NCAA tournament starts in March and March Madness begins, you follow it. I mean, I can tell you hundreds of guys that enter March Madness pools that couldn't name you 5 universities in the States.
And the thing is, sports culture right now is all focused on the playoffs. You know, baseball is talking about extending their playoffs to more teams. Everybody plays for the playoffs. That's what everybody wants. And a tournament is like that. It just eliminates guys, the lower tier, and then finally you have one guy left. It's basically winning a championship. That's what's so great about it.
All right. Now that we're talking, let's talk about Strikeforce real quick, a little bit more. The Challengers 13 series. Roddy Ferguson took out John Richard. This event happened last Friday or Saturday night, I believe. Roddy Ferguson takes out John Richard, or Richard, if that's how you want to pronounce it. Roddy Ferguson, Kimbo Slice's distant cousin. What do you know about that?
I know he's his cousin. He was a judo. I think he was a judo champ, and I believe he has a PhD.
He's a doctor as well. Oh, I guess he's not a meathead.
No, definitely not a
meathead.
From
last week's show, MMA fighters are meatheads. Yeah, there's a doctor that's fighting for Strikeforce.
And I can say he has a way better ground game than Kimbo. Extremely better.
That's not saying much, though.
No, but it was very good.
As much as we love Kimbo, let's be honest.
It was very good. He ended up winning by knee bar, so it was going. I mean, there was times where he was on the bottom, but he could handle himself there. So it was a pretty entertaining fight.
Canadian Julia Budd fell to the hands of Amanda Nunes. 14 seconds. I didn't see that one coming.
Yeah, it was a devastating punch. I mean, it was fast.
Well, the combination was just slick, and it just caught her flush, and she just lights out. The body just shut down completely. So it was kind of disturbing because we're big fans of Julia Budd on the show here. But hey, listen, it's mixed martial arts, 4-ounce gloves. It happens. Daniel Cormier, a name that we've talked about on numerous occasions on the show, he took on Devin Cole. Devin Cole's a bad man. I mean, I think he's got great skills, very experienced, but Cormier won all three rounds, 30-27. This is a prospect. This is a guy from the American Kickbox Academy, a guy that works with Cain Velasquez, a guy that's continuing to build. He's an NCAA champion as well, is he not?
He is.
2 years running or one?
I might be two. I think it one for sure.
We're Canadian. We're not supposed to know this.
But his wrestling was just is too dominant. I mean,
what about his kicks? His kicks were looking slick.
That surprised me in that first round. He was throwing a bunch of kicks, and what you mostly see from wrestlers is boxing. You don't really see them throw a lot of kicks because they're worried of being taken down. I guess when you're an NCAA champion,
yeah,
you don't really have
thing.
That fear.
Yeah, when you're an NCAA champion, you're that good of a wrestler, you can throw kicks.
But I'm extremely impressed. You know, his striking has a ways to go. I'm sure his jiu-jitsu is the same way, but his wrestling is top-notch, so definitely a guy to look at.
His combinations, though, his takedown and throwing combinations are just... ridiculous.
Yeah, and I mean, one day maybe he'll be in one of these Grand Prix tournaments.
No doubt in my mind. No doubt in my mind. The semi-main or the co-main event was Owen St. Pro taking on Ebongo Humphrey. Ebongo Humphrey, I mean, I like this guy. He comes to fight no matter what minute, no matter what round. He's going to try and fight. But OSP did emerge victorious. Started fatiguing, but that was like his 45th fight in 45 days. I mean, the guy just fights nonstop. He needs a break. His body needs to recharge. He needs to just chillax a little bit, let the body recover. But he's a good prospect in the light heavyweight division.
He's definitely a good prospect. I believe he's a former collegiate football player. He looked really good, but he almost did get caught in a knee bar at one point. He's a little too aggressive, but, I mean, he's athletic as anything. And he's been dubbed OSP. I mean, I don't know if we're going to say it too often because people might get confused with GSP. He's definitely a prospect you have to keep an eye on, and he does need a break. He's been fighting way too often for a guy of his skill.
And Tyrone Woodley took on Tarek Saffiedine, a fight that, let's put it this way, me being a huge fan of both guys, and I'm a bigger fan of Saffiedine because I love the way he mixes his striking. It just really wasn't particularly there in terms of timing-wise versus Tyrone Woodley. Woodley did a great job. His strategy versus Tarek was basically to control him, to nullify him, to almost blanket him. He did an amazing job earning the unanimous judge's decision. I think Saffiedine's going back. I went back to the gym and thought to himself, man, I really should have let my hands and my kicks go. I think we're going to see a stronger Tarek Saffiedine come back after this fight, but good on Tyrone Woodley to pulling this off.
And I definitely agree with you. I mean, watching this fight, Woodley, you know, obviously has a stronger wrestling, and he's very athletic, and he pushes a really good pace. But I thought Saffiedine is going to come out of this fight a lot stronger. His striking is very good, and he was active on the bottom. He was switching from triangle to omoplata. I mean, it's not something you see too often. Omoplatas aren't used that often in MMA, but he was very active. And he's working with Team Quest. So, I mean, his wrestling is going to get better. I mean, I think overall, he's going to come out stronger from this fight. And they're both great prospects and both guys to keep an eye on.
All right. The one thing you and I and pretty much every Canadian, especially in London, Ontario, will be paying attention to is when Mark the Machine Hominick takes on George Roop at the end or Saturday, January 22nd, UFC Fight Night for the Troops 2. With a victory over George Roop, Mark Hominick will get a title shot versus Jose Jr. Aldo, UFC 129, Saturday, April 30th. The question that people really need to ask themselves is, what type of fight will Mark Hominick have versus George Roop? Because he needs to come out unscathed. He can't have another situation where he breaks his wrist or he breaks his arm or he breaks his finger or busts up his thumb. He has to come out of that fight as injury-free as possible to have enough time to recuperate from the fight and then put in a good training camp to prepare for Jose Aldo, who was arguably number 3 in the pound-for-pound rankings. I mean, people are already starting to rip this fight apart, saying Hominick has no business being in there with Jose Aldo. I disagree per se because Hominick's striking is ridiculous. People could insult his submission game all they want. He taps people out, maybe not on the level of Jose Aldo, but he's a damn good fighter and he works very hard at his craft. The question is, he needs to go into this fight with Jose Aldo as close to 100% as possible. And this would be Jose Aldo's first fight after having the neck situation taken care of. How do you break down this whole scenario with Mark Hominick? Because this is the fight of his life in front of his hometown crowd, potentially 40,000 people, the very first show ever on Ontario soil. A lot of pressure on this guy.
Yeah, and unfortunately, with injuries that have to do with your hand, they kind of re-injure themselves. I mean, we saw it with Fedor. He long
time, for nonstop.
Yeah, long time injuries with hands are very delicate. But that being said, if Hominick hurts his hand again, which might happen.
Yep.
I still think he takes that fight with Jose Aldo. I mean, he's a very technical striker. He'll be able to use the hand less, and his cardio is amazing. I think he'd be able to keep up with the pace that Aldo puts out there. The big question is, how is he going to be able to handle Aldo's kicks? I mean, that's where Aldo's been most dominant recently, and I think striking-wise, it's going to be very interesting. I think Hominick has the skills to stand there with the Jose Aldo, but on the ground, it might be a different story. I mean, I'm not saying Hominick has a bad ground game because I think his ground game is very good. He's hit hip bumps into triangles. I mean, he's doing some very, very complicated things to do in the middle of a fight. But Jose Aldo's a former national champ in Brazil. I mean, that's a whole nother ball game. So it's definitely going to be interesting. another advantage is their wrestling skills are probably about even. I mean, Jose Aldo doesn't have the best wrestling skills in the world. And this fight most likely will take place on the feet. And I think he definitely needs to keep in the back of his mind that hand might get re-injured. So this fight with George Roop, it's not going to be a walk in the park.
And George Roop, we saw what he did to the Korean Zombie. Nobody gave George Roop a shot against Chang Sung-jung. No one did. No one did. And he lands that vicious head kick, drops the Korean Zombie down, who then bangs his head on his own knee and then knocks himself unconscious. I mean, George Roop is no joke. And the one thing, though, that people need to pay attention to here is the fact that George Roop, leading up to this fight with Hominick, up until the fight was announced, was that he was training with Sean Tompkins, who basically grew Mark Hominick up in this industry. He is Mark Hominick's number one trainer, always has been, likely will always be. But they know George Roop game altogether, and I know firsthand the sparring sessions that Hominick and Roop have had. So one would have to tend to favor Mark Hominick in this fight, but sparring is completely different than when you're actually doing it for real in a real fight. So don't count George Roop out just yet. He has the chance to prove to Joe Silva, to Sean Shelby, to Dana White, and to the UFC to say, hey, you know what, before you give Mark Hominick a title fight, he needs to go through me, and I'm going to prove to you why I deserve that title fight. Real question is, if Hominick loses to George Roop, then what does the UFC do with that title?
Well, with George Roop, another thing people forget is he's 6'1" at 145.
Yeah.
6'1", that's huge. That's big for a welterweight. I mean, you don't see many welterweights over 6 feet tall. I mean, 6'1", and he can cut to 145. So, I mean, the range is going to be an interesting thing. Is he going to be able to keep Hominick at a distance? Is Hominick going to be able to get in there inside? Hominick is the better technical striker.
I think those guys are going to work on is just strictly counterfighting, counterpunching, counterstriking. Let George be the one that tees off, one or two punch combinations until he gets tired, start throwing jabs only, then get inside. The same thing he basically did with Leonard Garcia. By the way, Leonard Garcia and Nam Pham are having a rematch. I think we're all excited about that because what happened with the decision when Pham should have won, and they gave it to Garcia. Regardless, sorry, I digress there. I think that's what Hominick and the boys are going to do. They're going to work a counter-striking style. But I like your point. I think you're bang on when you say he needs to protect his hands. Maybe taking him down to the ground is the best thing for Hominick versus Roop. And for Roop, keep this fight standing, make it into a war.
And I think pushing the pace is a very good point. I mean, Hominick has an unbelievable pace. So I'd expect him to really push Roop into those deep waters. If you're 6'1", you're probably cutting a lot of weight. So he's probably going to be a little bit more tired. So Hominick, not only having good cardio and pushing a really, really extreme pace, we've seen time and time again, I guess, Jub Nguyen, they had a crazy first 2 minutes. You're going to see that kind of really, strong pace being pushed. And I think by the third round, George Roop will probably be fading in that fight. So it'll be interesting to see how unscathed he comes out of that fight. But I think even if he gets injured, he'll still take a fight against Aldo because You've seen it with like a Carl Parisian. You know, you get a title shot, you turn it down because you're injured, and you never get that title shot again. This opportunity comes once.
Especially under the circumstances here in Toronto. Now, speaking of Toronto, the show in Toronto, it was announced that Sean Pearson is taking on Brian Foster. I think the verbal agreements are done. The contracts have been signed. Mark Bocek taking on Ben Henderson. Claude Patrick is taking on the Ninja. This card, Ivan Menjivar's on the card. Yves Jabouin's on the card. It's only getting bigger and better for the Toronto fighters. Jason McDonald's taking on, who's he fighting? Ryan Jensen, I believe?
I believe so.
I mean, these fights are beginning to pick up now. Sean Pearson versus Brian Foster. That just shows to me that the UFC has taken the stock of Sean Pearson and raised it to another level. I mean, Brian Foster is no joke.
No, he's definitely very skilled. I mean, he's a guy who's been in there with...
You can throw a kitchen sink at this guy, he's going to come back at you.
And he's been in there with some of the toughest guys in the welterweight division. So it's definitely a test, especially for Sean Pearson's second fight in the UFC, but... We'll see how it turns out. I mean, I think it's something he'll be up for sure.
I've been talking to Sean pretty much every day since we got the news of the fight, and he's pretty stoked. He's very confident, but he's going to put in the rounds to get that training done. I'm actually going to go meet Sean right now, Mark Bocek, and Sam Stout. We are heading over to the Fort Base, just off the lakeshore, to record some stuff with the troops for the Hero Fund. We're looking forward to that. I'm a sap, you know that. I hope I don't get too emotional as we're recording this. But any message you want to send off to those troops that help represent our country when they go overseas and do what they have to do for us?
Just come back soon.
Yeah, so we're going to have, you know, we're just waiting to hear from George St. Pierre as well, trying to get a message from George St. Pierre to give some messages to these troops. But we're heading off right now to go record this segment that you can see later on this month during the Fight for the Troops show. Thank you very much for coming in again.
Thank you for having me.
There you have it. So, Brock Lesnar, coach on the Ultimate Fighter, taking on Dos Santos soon. We took care of the Hominick situation and much more news coming out soon. Thank you very much for listening to the Showdown on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.